We talk about a mindset shift at zero, which is, I used to think that success was succeeding regularly, and now success is failing regularly.
Hey, podcast listener, even if you are alone in your entrepreneurial journey, know that today, right now in your earbuds, you are joined by thousands of entrepreneurs from all around the globe seeking to grow better, more profitable, location-independent businesses. If you'd like to learn more about what we do and download our entire back catalog, check out tropicalmba.com.
All right, Ian, welcome back to the podcast. We've got some amazing things to talk about today. I can't wait to dig into this. First off, I'm wearing my 20th anniversary Turkey Trot t-shirt because my high quality camera's in the mail.
That's right.
I got to wear all my bad t-shirts before. I'm saving the good ones. I don't want to put them through the wash cycle an extra time before it gets on camera. I want to keep those threads fresh.
I'm doing the same thing, Dan. I'm wearing my worst t-shirt here because this is the end of an era. This is the end of our audio only era. Cameras are in the mail. Razors have been ordered. There's no plastic surgery involved, although maybe there should be.
Yep. We got a high level podcast consultant involved. He's like, look, the cameras, they're going to be a couple $1,000. The lights, a couple $100. Fixing your appearance, I can't help you there. There's nothing we can do. There's no amount of money.
I had to Google if you can expense your wardrobe through the company, and it's not clear to me if you can or not, but I think I'm going to have to do some of that just to let you know.
Ian, one of the things I've been doing a lot in the past 12 months is business coaching. It's an extraordinary model. Here's what I do. I jump on the phone with our customers and I don't charge anything. And that's how it works.
And then we farm the information like we're going to do today for a podcast that we also don't charge money for.
That's right. I ruthlessly farm information from these coaching calls to create a Tropical MBA podcast. That is a banger. And one of the things, I mean, I've done so many of these calls in the past 12 months, Ian, and I see consistency of challenges at different revenue levels. I can predict it going in just by seeing what your revenue's at. I'm pretty sure what your key challenges are going to be 8 times out of 10. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to share what those things are on today's pod and see if we can have a discussion around it, see if you agree or disagree, can add some texture to these ideas. So here we go. If a client calls me and has between $0 and $250,000 in revenue, typically we are going to talk about mindset.
All right. You're going to get woo-woo?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we are going to consider going to Guatemala. There's no question about it. Yes. And be like, look, there's a couple things you can do. Guatemala's on the table.
I know a shaman.
That's right. Now, if you call me and your revenue is between $250,000 and $1,000,000, the key challenges we're probably going to discuss are seeking a reliable and repeatable source of new customers.
And we'll also say, like, yo, you can't be seeing that shaman every month. It's getting the price to go to Guatemala is exceeding what's good for the business here in terms of the air flight.
I said go to Guatemala. I didn't say make it a habit.
Right.
Okay. All right. If you call me and you have more than $1,000,000 in revenue, the key problem we're going to be talking about is your team composition. We're going to talk about the key functions in your business. We're going to talk about hiring, firing, and improving your team.
This is also the point where people come back and they're like, yo, Dan, I'm thinking about starting a retreat center in Guatemala with all my money that I made. Because it helped me have these breakthroughs. Yeah.
Well, yeah. If you call me, it's a million and you kept the Guatemala thing a habit. You're telling me about your investment in a farm down there. That's what's happening at this phase. So good for you.
And we're going to talk about why that's not such a good idea here.
All right. So here's what we got. We got 3 different cliffs, early stage bootstrapping. We've got mindset. We've got a source of repeatable customers. And we've got team management. So let's dig into some frameworks, some things we'll go through on those intro calls and work with founders to try to break through. That's what we're trying to do. Okay. So when you get the call and we're in the mindset phase, we're at zero revenue. We're at a couple bucks. We haven't yet gone to Guatemala. there's a couple key frameworks that I like to think about. And the Guatemala thing actually isn't a joke. So let's take a little trip down there for just a minute. It often can be the case that if you're scared or if you're having a tough time having a vision for how you can build a business, that it's not actually an intellectual challenge, it's an emotional one. And it could be the case that the concept of doing it brings up negative emotions that are so strong that those negative emotions prevent you from doing entrepreneurial activities. And in that case, it could just be a misfiring of the wires and something that you could certainly try to sort out in South America, or you could talk to friends, you could get a mastermind group. If you're open to critical feedback, you could find a therapist and talk to them about, hey, why do I have a negative emotion? It's confusing to me. Like, a lot of people run businesses, but for some reason, I feel very negative about it, even though I want to. That's a genuine challenge to sort out for all of us. Why do we have negative emotions about things we want to be positive about?
Yeah.
So it could be dealt with at the Guatemala level. So I want to caveat this with that. But that's not typically what we're going to talk about in a business coaching session. So I'll move on to the more businessy stuff, unless you have anything about sort of thoughts and feelings before we get started. The thoughts and feelings framework is something that I learned about in therapy. And so I can share it if it's useful to people, which is essentially like a lot of business-oriented people who are analytical often confuse their feelings with their thoughts. And so you have a big negative feeling when certain issues come up, and then you create a thought that's actually like a vague representation that's not actually the thing. The thing is a feeling like, you know, a lot of people think they don't deserve to be successful for some reason, which is, it's weird because it doesn't make any sense. Like, what do you mean I don't deserve to be successful? I want to be successful, you know, I want to, but some people have that feeling, but then they'll make a thought that interprets that feeling, which is your internal narrative about the feeling. And it could be like, things never work out for me, or whatever, but actually you feel you don't deserve success. And if you can deal with it at the feeling level, it can often be productive.
I think I can just summarize it with this. You want to be the person that feels comfortable putting your feet up on the airplane between the two seats, mm-hmm. because that's the comfortable way to ride economy class, is like put your feet up.
Well, give me that visual just a little bit. Okay. This pull me into economy because I'm familiar with the class.
You're in the economy seat, you take your shoes off, you put your feet up there. Mind you, there's people up there, sitting up there, but you put your feet between their seats where they can see and smell your feet, right? But you're comfortable. And you don't give it 2 second thoughts about the people up there because you're comfortable. That's really where you want to be in the 0 to 250 range. Like, you don't want to overthink, basically. You don't want to burden yourself with other people. You just want to move past yourself and get your feet up there.
Right. In the entrepreneurial game, there's no other people, but you're so used to sitting in an economy class that you're projecting these other people
Correct.
Up in that row, and you know what your sock game is.
Correct. So in other words, it's kind of nice in this phase to, like, perhaps if you have extra capacity to shut off a couple cells and put your feet up there, because you can tend to overthink this stuff, right?
Yeah. Again, we're talking 0 to 250 mindset. So here are the typical frameworks beyond thoughts and feelings that we are going to talk about. The first is running a shit ton of experiments. That's the technical term. And we're going to dig into what that means. The second, and this is a hard one, getting a new job that has apprenticeship qualities. I'll dispose with the apprenticeship thing for a moment, which is typically people's businesses look a lot like their last jobs. This is a very, very common pattern. Typically, people's careers look a lot like their mentors. People learn entrepreneurship by doing rather than by absorbing knowledge that's in the ether about entrepreneurship. It's a know-how. You can know everything about entrepreneurship without actually executing the behaviors of entrepreneurship. And so one way to short-circuit the mindset hangup is to evolve the way you get paid, is to work for a mentor, to work for a job that's aligned with the type of business that you one day want to have. That's what I mean when I say apprenticeship qualities. Now, there's a lot of objections that people typically have of this. First off, I don't want a job. That's why I'm talking about starting a business. I can't afford it. All these sorts of things. However, my counter to that is getting one client is a lot easier than getting 100. And if you can't sort it out at the job level, you might not be able to sort it out at the business level.
Right.
Okay. I think for a lot of people that I speak with that have this objection, by the way, these sorts of things are typically when I'm speaking, not typically our clients. Typically, our clients have overcome these sorts of, I don't know if that distinction is valuable, but these sorts of conversations happen a little bit more around the Thanksgiving dinner table than around like entrepreneurial circles, because there's sort of a clear divide here, which is like the risk involved in changing your career is relatively low to the risk involved in sort of starting a business. But there's kind of like a bit of a gambler mentality, which I want to touch on later in the episode, a bit of a gambler mentality in this concept of, well, if I do this thing, it could take off. And the answer, which we're going to get to, is, well, most times it won't take off. So here's the next mindset exercise. Running a shit ton of experiments and finding an accountability system to doing so. So I want to dig into this a little bit. I kind of have this, there's this number out there, you know, 80-20 principle, 1,000-day rule, the 10-year career. There's a lot of these benchmark numbers for what entrepreneurship looks like in the digital age, call it that. One of the numbers I see is that about 5% of projects succeed and go on to be, quote, scalable opportunities. And if it's true that only 5% of projects succeed, then you need to do 20 projects. Or, I don't know math that well, you might need to do like 8 or 10 or something like
that. You need to shoot a lot of shots, basically.
You need to shoot a lot of shots. And what is shooting a shot? And I think it's worth kind of digging in. I think shooting a shot is creating an offer that you can deliver on and presenting it to X number of target clients and seeing if you can take money for it. That's a shot. And whether or not those opportunities are going to be scalable in the future is often very hard to predict. So what happens in the mindset phase is people sort of get ahead of themselves. They know so much about entrepreneurship and what scalability means and all these sorts of things that we forget that shooting the shot is the actual know-how. Putting the offer out there, attempting to sell it, taking money and delivering at a rate that's profitable right away. That is shooting a shot. Why is this hard to do? I don't think it's the way we're trained, first off. We are trained that success often comes from being right. And if the 5% rule says something true about entrepreneurship, then entrepreneurs succeed primarily by being wrong. And I think that is a fundamental mindset shift that's really complicated and worth hanging out on. It's what you're talking about when you're talking about putting your socks in the row in front of you. It's like, you're doing something wrong. It's not working. People don't want to buy it. They have negative feedback. You fail and you do it again. That's a mindset that is entrepreneurial and is really tough. By the way, you can do this in the context of your LLC. That can be the company that you hope becomes scalable and a great financial success one day. You can shoot 8 shots in one LLC towards even one target market. Or you can adjust that market, adjust that offer, adjust the sorts of people you're talking to.
The things even in the last year, Dan, that we did that succeeded, like very few of them, very few of them succeeded. And even in the last year. And I like to play this game where I look at the last 5 to 10 years and I think about what were the major milestones or the things that really worked or the things that I really remember. You can do this not just like with your business, but just milestones. Things that you appreciate. And there's like so few of them, actually. Most of it is just life happening. And I think that's the same in the business. It's just things are happening. So it's not necessarily success. It's not necessarily failure. It's just things happening. The success rate in daily life and business is pretty low for the most part. It's only these key things or these key moments generally that you see these inflection points or that you see these major growth curves happening or you see yourself jumping stairs up.
Well, if you think about it from a mindset perspective, if you show up to high school and fail 19 times out of 20, you fail. If you show up to college, you fail. If you show up to your consulting gig, 19 times out of 20, you fail. You're fired. You're out. You don't get the degree. You don't get the job. You don't get the accolades. In entrepreneurship, if you fail 19 times out of 20, and then the one offer that works is profitable, it cash flows your entrepreneurial exploration. You build your team out. You stumble onto some products that, oh my gosh, I didn't even think it was scalable. Now it's scaling. I've got product market fit. That's a success. And this is a mindset shift. You know, this is the hard part of the transition. Let's look at another area that I think sometimes it's inspiring. Sometimes we look to sports. One of the things that's sort of entrepreneurial adjacent that I like to look at is poker. There is this brilliant book written by a professional poker player called Alexander Fitzgerald. This guy could be a writer if he wasn't a poker coach. He has a way with words. He wrote this book called Exploitative Play in Live Poker. It's a gem. He travels in it. He talks about financial management. I think this book is a total gem because it's basically the story of his entrepreneurial journey through poker. And one of the things that's happening in both of our communities is that there's more information about how to be successful than ever. There's so much information out there about how to have a good business, how to be a great poker player. Poker's even a more complete informational system, but there's not a lot of wiggle room. There's game theory optimized ways to play depending on what your opponents do. But the conclusion that Alex comes to in the book is that the number one exploit that exists at every poker table all across the world is that people don't want to look stupid. They do not want to look stupid because they don't want to show their stupid plays to other players. They will make suboptimal decisions in order to look smart to the other people around the table. This is the number one conclusion of this guy's long and illustrious career of teaching a degenerate gambling game. Okay. So take this and apply it to what we're talking about with the 5% rule and with mindset limitations of entrepreneurship. We don't want to look stupid. Yet you're failing 19 times out of 20. Those two things are hard to reconcile. And it's why you talk about putting socks in the next row in economy class. It's why we talk about driving entrepreneur mobiles. Hey, the world out there is telling you that success is driving a Lexus. Well, we're going to need to downgrade to the Toyota, and we're going to make sure it's used, and we're going to make sure it's paid off, because this know-how requires different sorts of behaviors. It requires lionizing to a degree, figuring out that something doesn't work. And that's what Alex does beautifully in his book, is he says, if the other people at the poker table look at you like you suck at poker, and everyone's there because they're supposedly smart, you're doing something right. And he's trying to give that lift of, this is actually how things go down. This is how you become a success. And I think the story is similar in entrepreneurship, is that you're going to have to shoot a lot of shots, and you're going to have to be surprised by the outcomes, and you're going to have to trust the information that your behaviors bring back to you and follow that. And it's not always going to be accolade, 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 success. There you go. That's the mindset portion. All right, Ian, so the next level, we have shot a bunch of shots and we have found things that are working. We're at $250,000 of revenue. We're somewhere in between $250,000 and $1 million. The most common challenges that you can kind of brute force your way to $250,000, but now we're getting at the stage where we start to have to identify systems that work on our behalf. The two key systems are a repeatable and reliable source of new customers. And then the other system is going to be retention. Retaining your current customers, which often revolves around one key hire. So this one is pretty dramatic. Most of the calls I have with clients in this range revolves around getting new customers and retaining our current customers. That's pretty much the whole conversation. So I wrote down here the key experiments that we talk about in these calls are customer development, marketing experiments, and changes to the offer. I'll start with changes to the offer. Typically, if we're going to meet these standards of, say, a labor efficiency ratio of 2, which means that for every dollar you spend on staff, direct labor, you need to return $2, or a return on total invested capital of 50%, which means for the total enterprise, including your startup time, if you're putting in $100, you need to get $150 back out. So if we take these two basic metrics, what we're trying to do is build a quality delivery system around those two basic benchmarks. If we can't, and we're required to do everything, the problem is we're not going to be able to retain our current customers, and then we won't be able to go out and figure out the big thing, which is the reliable source of new customers. So that's where often we'll have to tweak the offer to find some more profitability so that we can get that key hire that can deliver the service. As an example, our pricing at remote first recruiting is completely contingent on how we can retain, cultivate, and hire high-quality recruiters to be able to do that work at the level to which we're promising and creates value for our clients.
So you pointed out something here that's interesting, is that the key hire is supposed to basically work on the cash flow. The key hire isn't brought in to like work on growth or the next business idea. It's strictly for delivering the product or the service.
And I'll tell you the reason. The reason is that you probably can't afford to hire the person who knows how to get the reliable customers, the reliable source of customers. That person, you probably can't afford. Now, that's sort of what a lot of people call profit truth or money truth, which is that if someone knew how to do that, they're probably doing that somewhere else and getting paid for it. And that is a less legible problem than delivering upon the cash flow that you've created.
But the impulse here is you get a little cash and you think like, well, okay, I'm going to go hire some agency, or I'm going to go hire some ringer, or I'm going to go hire somebody that knows what they're doing. I got this thing. We're up and running here. We're selling hot dogs every day. I just need customers. My product's great.
Right. That is the impulse. And I think it circles back a little bit to this concept of a little bit of a gamble. And what we can do is say, well, okay, if our hit rate on marketing channel experiments is 1 out of 10, how much is that gamble going to cost you versus simply bringing somebody in to do the delivery? Because of the illegibility of the problem, this is where like relentlessly resourceful founder mentality comes in. You're already used to running experiments that are going to fail, doing it quickly, being held accountable to that. You did it in the first phase. Now is typically the time where we're going to talk about how to do it in the next phase. You could find the ringer, but make that your thing. Someone's got to be doing the delivery while you're doing that. And so typically what we're going to talk about here is how to get that key hire in, how to get those numbers right, how to adjust the offer to your marketplace such that you can afford to do what you need to do.
Meanwhile, you saw a glimpse of maybe like a six-figure income for yourself. You got out of your job, you started this business.
No, I'm glad you're bringing this up.
And it's like, oh, there it is. But you're telling me right now,
it was going to be mine.
You got to hire somebody.
Do you have the confidence that you can solve the next problem? You know, one of my favorite things that Clay Collins said about running a business is that you have to change your job every 6 months. And that is your job. It's really hard to hire somebody that wants to change their job every 6 months. This is why we also talk about the concept of customer development. What is customer development? People came in under one offer. They're paying you for a solution. But at the end of the day, they are buyers who have a set of problems. You can potentially develop your customers, build your relationship with them, and figure out higher order problems, different sorts of problems that they have. This is how you can start to adjust that offer to deliver more value to them. You're now getting enough profitability where you can do these two things at once, get a key hire to do the delivery, and then aggressively invest your time in building out that repeatable source of new customers. One of the things that I think it's interesting, just stating these rules in the universe, and then if you're going to be the exception, just to argue vehemently against it. But here's a rule. You're going to be in charge of growth until 5 million as a founder. That's just a rule. You're in charge of growth. You're in charge of finding the customers. And if you're finding yourself in a business situation where you're not the one, you want to negate that responsibility, you want someone else in charge of growth, then send me an email. I want to know the story of a founder that wasn't primarily in charge of growth, until the $5 million in revenue mark. And by the way, $5 million is typically the point where, you know, RevOps and like a professionalized sales team and these sorts of things can be created as systems. But even then, it's still typically the founder is going to be the ringer growth person.
I think it's important to establish these rules, even if they only work 95% of the time, because they do work 95% of the time. That's the point.
Exactly.
So like you said, if you want to argue against that strategy, or if you've had experience with it working outside of that strategy, it's worth knowing that you're in the minority. So people shouldn't chase minority opportunities. They should probably, especially in this phase of business, they should chase what is working for the majority, because it's easier to focus on winning then.
For sure.
If these strategies are laid out and the rules are kind of made.
Yeah, and we'll allow for the case that it could be that 5% are these wonderful businesses that have stumbled onto something unique in the universe, and that's totally possible. And the great part about owning a business is that's a possibility that you have surface area to, that it could happen to you. But 95% of the time, these sorts of things are intentional. They are patterns, and they are things that there's sort of known courses of action that you can work through. I think if you have a gambler mentality and you want to put growth into the hands of someone else, then typically that's what that is. That's taking the hard thing and putting it on someone who's basically undercapitalized and underskilled to do that hard thing.
I think you could listen to us and you could be like, yeah, these guys aren't even on YouTube. What do they know? Well, what I know is there's people in our community that are making millions of dollars that are on YouTube as their primary source of income, and they're still responsible for growth in their company.
All right, Ian, so we talked about mindset as the first level. We talked about repeatable sources of new customers as the second level. Now we're going to talk about, if you give us a buzz and you're over $1 million in revenue, what are we going to be talking about? This is a challenging moment in business, because up until now, you've been the star player. You've changed your mindset. You've gone to Guatemala. You've lost 7 pounds. You're kicking ass. You figured out that challenging problem of changing your life, controlling your income, managing a few key team players, and finding that source of customers, and understanding at this point, typically, you're going to have a really strong intuition about the problems in your marketplace. And I want us to take a step back to recognize what an incredible accomplishment this is. Very few businesses get to $1 million in revenue, statistically speaking. It's also a moment in people's entrepreneurial career where most of the clients I speak to at this point are lifers. They're lifers. You know why? Because they're confident they can do it again. Because they're players. They're expert players. They know how to create an offer, to shoot a shot. They know it's going to be 2 to 5 to 10 to 15 offers. They're going to be able to make a living through entrepreneurship indefinitely.
Sorry, all I can think about here, Dan, is in your example of losing the 7 pounds, is that losing 7 pounds is enough?
That's right. If you
okay.
If you're only 7 pounds off, right?
Right.
You know?
Like I was only 7 pounds away from my fighting weight. Okay. Well, then you were probably doing okay to begin with. A lot of us need a lot more improvement than that. I'm just pointing that out. But let's assume you're right.
Yeah.
One of the things that happens at this $1 million revenue point is that you start to feel superhuman. And you should. You've accomplished something that very few people have done. I think I looked it up one time. It was like less than 5% of businesses in America make over $1 million or something like that. So like you're in this category that you don't even know how hard it is to get into. So congratulations. But then this thing starts to happen. And this is a good thing and a bad thing. This is a curse and a blessing, which is you feel like you can do it again. And so what do? Of course, you try and do it again. And that can be problematic because you're really just getting started in your business, right? You've made it to a million. It's so hard not to diversify. It's so hard not to look at other things. Stick with it. Figure it out, because the road to 5 million is hard.
I think that's a great point, Ian. And sometimes it is a road where people diverge. They sell. They go 0 to 1. They try and bring in somebody that can go through the scale phase. It is genuinely a mix of, hey, I've got this 0 to 1 thing down, and that is a journey that I want to repeat, versus what is the introduction of an entirely new skill set? So we're back to the new job every 6 months thing. And if a founder takes your advice, calls me up and says, look, we did $1 million last year. I want to do 1.3 or 4 million this year. A lot of times, you know, the first year we're going to say, I want to do 2 or 3 or 4 million. And then we do 1.2 or 1.3 and we realize, okay, we're in for something here. This is going to be maybe a multi-year process. And so what am I doing during the multi-years? Am I just adjusting my mindset? Am I just finding new customers? Typically, this is where we're seeing founders have to change from player to coach, which has been the theme of the pod the past year. And strangely enough, maybe even the hardest part, because the 0 to 1 phase is you signed up because you have ideas. You're loving now the concept of putting offers in front of customers, talking to them, developing solutions for their problems, making your product or service better every single day. You're updating the website every day. You're talking to customers every day and you're in your groove. Like you said, you never have to go back and work a job ever again if you don't want to. And now all of a sudden, we have to do something completely different, which is manage a team. And this is where we come back to the rule. 95% of businesses that go from 1 million to 5 million to 10 million have a robust team that is competent, that is professional, that work at the business. And this is a lot, because to have a robust team of professionals that work at a business means that you're going to need to manage. It means that you're going to need to be hiring all the time. It means that you're going to need to be firing regularly. It means you're going to be having difficult conversations with people who you pay a lot of money to about how they can achieve a return on your investment in them. And this is when a $1 million plus founder calls, we might start the conversation anywhere. We might start with that they're unhappy with their CPA. We might start with their recent trip to Guatemala. We might start with their marketing strategy, but it always ends up at the same place. And this is different than if you're at $500,000 in revenue, because we're going to talk about your marketing strategy itself. Show me the data on that marketing strategy that you just ran. What's your ROAS? Okay, let's consider calling this person and adjusting it this way. That's the conversation. At 1 million plus, the conversation starts to change to, who's in charge of your ads? How are they performing? How can we get them to perform better? Who's the next person that's going to be in charge of your ads? The conversation completely changes. And I think a lot of us still want to talk about ROAS. We still want to talk about the actual player stuff versus the coach stuff. And we talk about a mindset shift at zero, which is, I used to think that success was succeeding regularly, and now success is failing regularly. Dang, that's tough. Well, in the 0 to 1 phase, I used to think that making my customers happy and being ethical and everybody smiling about our product and service is the right way. And now I'm encountering a lot of challenges with my team, things that need to change, people that need to come and go. And now all of a sudden, emotionally, this has become really difficult because I'm not used to this idea of difficult conversations, of disappointing people, of holding people to a high standard. It's just a different emotional ballgame than the positive reinforcement of doing so well and winning with your product and service. Now all of a sudden, there's going to be a lot of L's as you're trying to find an effective team that can do the same kind of level of delivery that you enjoyed at the sub $1 million level. Does that resonate? I feel like that's the 95% of it. So many of the methodologies that we're going to talk about, we're going to do your cash flow mapping, we're going to talk about your CPA, we're going to do all this stuff. It always really boils down to team composition at this point, 95% of the time.
It resonates. And it also makes me think that the team that got you from 0 to 1 is not going to be the same team that got you to 1 to 5. Like you're saying, truth about growing the business.
Yes.
Is that things are going to have to change, and it's not just going to have to be you. It's going to have to be the people that are involved in the business.
Yes. You go from a pirate ship where somebody's raising the sails and then putting a sword in their belt and jumping off the boat and defending the ship, doing all sorts of things around, to having a more professionalized vessel where someone might focus on the sailing portion more regularly, and it's typically a different team composition. So you might say, okay, well, how do we overcome these things? Because you don't want to just jump in there and start barking louder and being more demanding. And what we try to do is introduce methodologies. So we'll do things like key function hire. We'll bring in a finance portion. We'll start talking about things like organizational design. We'll start talking about things like meeting cadences and how the operation runs and different KPIs for different departments. And again, these are like professional ways to talk about that hard emotional thing, which is team composition, essentially. Like, all roads lead back to team comp, but we're not going to talk about that as this person that and this person that and the emotional difficulties of all those things. What we're going to do is bring in a business apparatus. We're going to start to professionalize the company so that it becomes apparent to everyone involved the difficult decisions that need to be made.
It really resonates with me, and especially at the, let's call it $500,000 to $1 million range, which is you make this transition of working on your business instead of in your business. I'm even thinking about the coaching sessions, like going to the coaching session. And I see this all the time, even past $1 million too. And it's a red flag for me. I can't take those 2 days off because I'm working in the business.
Yeah.
And then you get in this meeting and you're like thinking about all the things that you have to do and you're distracted. I've been this person before. And you're like, oh my gosh, I got to like send these 3 emails and the proposals and this and that. It's like, whoa, if you want to grow this thing, you got to work on the business, not in the business. So you have to structure this in a way that can at least allow you to take 2 days off to think about the planning of your business. And then going forward, you have to get the right people in the seats that can actually operate the business. Of course, you know, retaining your margins and whatnot. So you can continue to do the one thing that you can only do, which is what we've identified in phase 0 through 250, 250 to a million, and a million to 5 million still, which is growth. It is very hard to deliver on growth if you're operating in the business every day, because most of the growth strategies are not happening through delivery.
There you go. That's 100% it. You know, I was thinking about a call I had with a company over a million, and it resonates so much with me because that call was the first time this team had thought about on since they bought the business. They were in the whole time. And so even the first rudimentary step, crawling out of the ocean onto the beach, is just having time for on. And it's like, well, what do we talk about when we're talking about on? And that's when these sorts of methodologies come out. Well, let's start to model out the key function in your business. What are the health metrics? Whose area of responsibility in the company are those things? How can we improve them? And so on. These were a lot of the themes that we've been talking about on the show here in the past year.
I'd like to point out too, Dan, that it's increasingly becoming obvious to me that in the 250 to 1 mil range, if you can't find yourself some kind of operator or somebody that can deliver on the product or the service that you've promised your customers, if you find yourself stuck in that delivery phase in your business, like you are the person delivering, that problem will always exist in the company and you will never be able to work on your business. You will always be stuck in your business. And I think that can scale, actually. Like, you can get stuck in your business to millions of dollars, basically. And then you're just basically stuck there until you start bringing people in. And if it becomes the case, too, that you can't afford to bring people in to the business, then you're never going to get out of that, too. So it's like much easier to figure out in the early phase of the business, 250 to a million, if your business model will afford to bring people in for the delivery of the service. And this gets back to Greg Crabtree's methodology, right? If you cannot afford to bring people into your business, you will always get stuck in your business.
There's a profit truth to it.
So I just want to point that out because I think you could go like years of not correcting your financial model and get stuck in the business and then never be able to crawl out of the business, whether or not you want to do the work or not.
Yeah. And I'd like to point to another phenomenon, which is that's totally okay. If we're recognizing it, I think I can summon up a few handfuls of founders who do not want to scale. They do not want to bring on a professionalized team. And instead, what they want to do is maximize income, deliver efficiently, and then take their money and buy investments, you know, buy technology companies that are great at scaling via the public markets invest in your friends' businesses, buy other assets outside of your primary thing, and get while the getting is good. And so I do think that there is a decision to be made here. What you don't want to do is start making speculative investments, start confusing your business model, siphoning off profits for growth initiatives that aren't going to return. If you're not going to move into this professionalization stage, then I think a really good strategy to consider is simply maximizing profitability and efficient delivery of the product so that you can make sure in the window of competence and competition that you found yourself in the market, that you're going to maximize your profits during that phase. So to sum, you know, we've been doing a bunch of coaching calls, and I guess what we're trying to do is make this case for what's happening 95% of the time. And to really make the strong case, if you're the 5% that doesn't fit the patterns, let's talk about it. We want to hear about it. We want to share your story on the pod. But also, let's not reinvent the wheel for every single business. A lot of this business stuff remains the same. We can leverage it so we can move faster and make sure that our products and services and ideas are getting in the hands of more people. We don't need to reinvent the business building side of this. So the three levels we're seeing through our coaching calls, number one, the mindset level, 0 to 250. 250 to a million is the repeatable source of customers level. And then 1 million plus is we're calling team management, the enterprise, building out your enterprise level. So that's hiring, firing, and managing team members. So there you go. That's it. I think that's it for the pod. I'm curious to see what listeners think of this one. Thanks for listening.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Tropical MBA podcast. You can go to tropicalmba.com, get access to hundreds of back episodes and all kinds of other goodies. Load up your iPod. That is the cheapest way to fly business class on your next international flight. We will see you next Thursday morning, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Yeah.